We're here on part two of the end times. Don't ask me how many parts we're going to have. I do not know yet. It depends on how slow I am at teaching you these parts. So we're going to begin with part two, but in getting ready for part two, I want to remind you of where we are and what we are doing. We are talking about the different ages and what is going to happen headed towards the coming of the Lord, the church being snatched away, the time of the tribulation, the kingdom of the Lord, thousand-year kingdom of the Lord, the time of the deception, the time of the eternal kingdom that is going to come when we go into eternity future. We are nowhere very far down the list of that of those things. We started with the church age, and as you remember in the church age, we were dealing with some things that have to be in place. They just have to be in place before the Lord can come and snatch his church away. Now, if you want to talk about the snatching of the church away or the rapture, that's in part one of the lesson. We've already gone through that. The important thing that I talked to you about was the fulfillment of a prophecy. No part of a prophecy in God's word is so small or so insignificant that it is not going to be fulfilled by the Lord. When the Lord makes a prophecy and says, this is what's going to happen, it is going to happen. And so, if you remember, we were dealing with the prophecy that I'm hanging a lot of things on in this lesson is the prophecy about the dream that came to Nebuchadnezzar when he had the dream of a statue. The statue had a head of gold, had a chest and arms of silver, a belly of bronze, a waist and legs of iron, and then the two legs turned into five toes on each leg, five countries that would be formed out of the empire that kept stepping down and taking over each other. The head was Babylon. The chest was the Medo-Persian Empire. The belly was the Greek Empire with Alexander the Great. And then the waist was the Roman Empire that started with Julius Caesar. And then it split into a western leg and an eastern leg. The Western Empire finally fell to the Germanic people in 476 AD. And those German people decided in their wisdom to take that land that they had conquered and to cut it up into five chunks or states. And they did, and it was Britain, France, Spain, Italy, and what's called North Africa. 1,000 years later, basically, in 1453 AD, when the Muslims conquered the city of Constantinople, changed its name to Istanbul, they took the Eastern Empire. We call it also the Byzantine Empire. And in the Muslims' infinite wisdom, they took that chunk of land that they had conquered and they divided it up into five parts: Macedonia, Greece, Turkey, Syria, and Egypt. So lo and behold, Nebuchadnezzar's dream, as interpreted by Daniel, came true all the way down and has come true, and world history has confirmed it as being true all the way down to the 10 toes. We don't need to speculate any at all about what those 10 toes are. We know who they are. It's Britain, Italy, France, Spain, North Africa, Egypt, Syria, Turkey, Greece, and Macedonia. We know who they are. And Nebuchadnezzar's dream goes on to add one more part to it, which has not been fulfilled yet. Not even to this day it has not been fulfilled yet. And we're a long ways from 1453, when the last leg fell to and became five toes. The last part is all those toes will reunite together and become a united country again. They're separate parts. They're brittle, but yet they're strong. But they're going to reunite. In reuniting, they are going to all be controlled by the minister of a religion. Now, we don't know who that religion is to begin with. We just know that there's this religion that is over them that's going to ride these 10 countries and many other countries with a vengeance. that minister is so thought of and so respected among these 10 countries that when he endorses a certain man to be the president of that new 10 countries, everyone will vote for that man to be the president. Although, the supreme president, let me put it that way. Although, while he is running for that place, three of the presidents of those 10 countries will reject him. And lo and behold, even before he's elected, that supreme president will have three of those presidents, three of the 10 presidents killed. And so it will end up as 10 countries with seven of the old presidents in place, three have been killed, and one supreme ruler over all of them. That's very important to Daniel's vision that he has in chapters 7, 8, 9, even 10 and 11, where all this is being described. It's very important to what is given to John in the book of Revelation, because all of that fits together perfectly. Now, as I stated to you before, there are some people in one of the last 2 weeks' lessons, in part one, there are some people who believe that we are living in the kingdom age right now, that we are already there, that the Lord's in control and we're living in the kingdom age. Those are called preterists. They believe that the Lord has already done everything we're going to do and this is as good as it gets. The problem with that is they believe that everything came, the Bible was totally fulfilled in 70 AD when Titus destroyed the temple in Jerusalem. Well, there's problems with that. And here's just one of those problems. The problem with that is Paul writes to the Thessalonians, and this is in part one. The Thessalonians are already saying that the Lord has come, that the Lord has come. The day of the Lord is coming. We're living in the kingdom time. They're teaching that. They're teaching that preterist, what's called a preterist point of view today. They're teaching something similar to that. And Paul writes them a letter to say, whoa, wait a minute. The day of the Lord has not come and cannot come until the great apostasy comes. Well, in Paul's day, when Paul is saying this, Judaism is a religion in the world. Christianity is a birthing new religion in the world, gaining speed with churches almost all over the known world at this point in time. By the time he says this to the Thessalonians, Hinduism is in place and Buddhism is in place. But there's one major religion of the world that's not in place yet, and it does not come in place until 622 A.D., Well, if the preterists want to say the Bible was totally fulfilled in 70 A.D., they've got a problem because they've got to add on all the years until 622 A.D. when this new religion comes along that is an apostate religion that is a mixture of Judaism and Christianity interpreted correctly and repeated correctly, and it's called Islam. And that's an apostate religion. A little bit of pagan religion of the moon god Allah, a little bit of Judaism included, a little bit with their dietary everything, and a little bit of Christianity with the wrong stuff involved. It's just totally wrong. Muhammad could not read and he could not write and he was not literate and he just made the stuff up. And so with that, the apostate religion has to show up. So the preterists can't be right just on that one thing alone, but we can add more and more to it. Well, with that, as we finish up the part one, the study ends as we get through with we're trying to transition into the tribulation time from what's called the church age. And the church has been snatched away where we left last week. The church has been snatched out of here and taken away to heaven to be with the Lord, to be at the marriage, of course, called the marriage of the Lamb, and to also go through what's called the judgment seat of Christ. Now, the judgment seat of Christ is not something to be fearful of. The judgment seat was never something to be fearful of. It was always something to be glad that you're there, because it was a place of rewards that were given for work or races well done, and the, being a victor. The judgment seat, that name applies to the bema, or the place where the judge would come and the first, second, third, fourth, fifth place winners of a race or a gladiator event or whatever would come and stand on the bema, and the judge would come and give them a crown or give them a leaf or give them immunity from the next fight or give them some sort of reward or give them a bride or give them something as a reward. It should not ever be feared. It is not the judgment that is ever to be feared by Christians. It is not a judgment that non-Christians will ever take part in. They're going to get the great white throne judgment, and that ends way on down past what our timeline is. That's going to happen down, and I'm going to get to that as we go through these lessons. Anyway, in place, the Lord has been snatched away as we ended our last lesson, and the white horse rider has made a peace treaty with Israel for 7 years. He is the supreme leader of the revived Roman Empire. Now, with that to say, as I want to get started, in fact, I've got a drawing up on the board here so that you can see it a little bit in another way. I like to do it in all different ways. This is time. This is just the line of time. And here, the church age ends with the snatching away of the church. And here, the tribulation time begins with the first 3.5 years being called the tribulation, and the last 3.5 being called the great tribulation. There are some things that are in place prior to the church being snatched away and have to be in place. That revived 10-nation Roman Empire led by the beast has to be in place before the church is snatched away. There are some people that say, oh, the EU over there, the European Union, that is the revived Roman Empire. It can't be the revived Roman Empire because it has too many countries, too much landmass that was not part of the Roman Empire at the time that each leg fell. It has to be what the Lord says it's going to be, and He says it's going to be those 10 toes. It's not going to be Germany. It's not going to be any of the other parts that are up and around, any of the other countries that are all part of it. It's going to be only those 10 toes. It's not going to include Scotland. It's not going to include North Ireland. It's not going to include Portugal's got to go back in and be part of Spain. And lots of these unions have to join back together. Morocco, Libya, and Algeria, which were all part of what was called North Africa. Those three nations have to form back together. By the way, just a few years ago when Gaddafi died, they tried to, the new leader that took over after Gaddafi tried to pull Libya and Algeria back together. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And Morocco will finally go back in together. It will happen. And when these 10 toes unite together, they will form this revived United Empire, Roman Empire. And the beast, number one, who's also the white horse rider, will be in place. Next thing is the apostasy. Let me just go down here. The apostasy led by the second beast, that's the false religion, has to be in place, and this false prophet has to be there to get this beast number one elected. And then the one in the middle I want to handle right now. It has to be in place. No prophecy about the end times is so insignificant or so minor that it should be dismissed as unimportant. And such is the case with the inhabitation of space and the ocean. All prophecies found in Scripture must be fulfilled. And they must be fulfilled at the appropriate time. Two such prophecies deal with the Lord's judgment on two groups of people when He returns at Armageddon at the end of the period of the tribulation. So here's what I'm doing. I know that when we get to the end of the Great Tribulation, there's going to be a battle called the Battle of Armageddon. I know that two groups of people are going to be judged when the Lord returns at the Battle of Armageddon that I need to tell you about now. Because they have to be in place. They have to be in a certain place so that the prophecy can be fulfilled. You follow me? So instead of waiting to the Battle of Armageddon to tell you about it, I need to tell you about it now because the timing and the technology just requires that before the church is snatched away and a peace treaty is made with Israel, that these two groups of people have to be in their place so that the Lord can do something with them 7 years later. Well, with that in mind, let's look at this. Amos says it like this in the book of Amos, talks about those that he is going to punish on the return, which is on the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord is used in this passage. Anytime you hear the word day of the Lord in the Old Testament or in the New Testament, it always, always, always refers to that very last day of the tribulation when the Lord returns for the Battle of Armageddon. It's also called the day of the Lord. You're going to hear that repeatedly. In Amos chapter 9, 2 through 3, talk about this day of the Lord. And I just put that in because I want you to go read the whole passage, but let's just look at the important part. Though they dig into Sheol, from there shall my hand take them. And though they ascend to heaven, from there I will bring them down. And though they hide on the mount, on the summit of Carmel, I will search them out and take them from there. And though they conceal themselves from my sight on the floor of the sea, from there I will command the serpent and it will bite them. So looking on down, you see actually four groups are talked about. Two of those groups are very easy and are already in place. Group number one, I say, is those who dig into the dirt to hide. It's not hard to do that. I mean, people are doing that now. I mean, I've got some classmates, or at least two classmates, who are so worried about the end of the world coming that they are living in another state in bunkers with 30 years worth of food and supplies stored up. You know, we got people like that around here. They're just, so worried that they're going to survive. And so they're underground living. Okay. Lots of people, by the way, are that way. All you have to do to understand that is just listen to our radio stations at some odd hour when nobody else is advertising. And they're advertising all this food that'll last for 25 years and all of this and all of that and how you can bunker down and how you can build your place in the ground and dig a hole in your backyard and put this safety place there that will withstand nuclear bombs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we got people all over the world who are doing this type of stuff. That's not hard to understand. Now, number two says, those who hide in the heavens. That poses us a problem. That poses a problem. Those who hide on the mountains. That's not a problem. We've got people right now who've run to the mountains to hide from everything in creation. In fact, that's where some of our law enforcement people find some of our crooks hidden in the mountains, going off to the woods. But we've got other people that want to get away from metroplexes like Houston and other places, and they want to go buy a plot of land and they want to hide away. And so that's not too far. But the fourth one's also bad. Those who hide at the bottom of the sea. Do you see two of them I've got marked? Those who hide in the heavens and those who hide at the bottom of the sea. We've got a real problem with this. And the problem with two of these groups is this. At this time, September the 6th of 2015, this time where we are right now in the church, it is impossible for large groups of people to hide in the heavens or at the bottom of the sea. You just can't get there. You don't have a way to take care of things that are there. Now, is it impossible? Well, no, it's not quite impossible, but we can get there. I talked this over with Dixon Murr. How many of y'all know Dixon? Longtime staff member. Do you know what he was before he came on staff here? He was a rocket scientist at NASA. Do you know the famous person that Dixon Murr worked hand in hand with early in his career? You've got it. What's his name? Von Braun. That's right. He's a German man that after World War II, during World War II and before, under his leadership, all these rockets and everything were built that Hitler used in World War II. At the end of World War II, almost all of those rockets and everything ended up in White Sands, New Mexico, which of course is where Dixon ended up too. And there he worked side by side with this German rocket scientist that helped propel America into the space industry. I called Dixon and I said, "Dixon, I've got some questions for you. I'm fixing to teach this lesson because I'm dealing with some stuff that just has to be in place because there's a judgment on these people at the end of the tribulation time, and I've got these questions. Number one, Dixon, is it possible for us to put people in space, groups and colonies of people? Is it possible for us to put groups and colonies of people down on the ocean floor?" Well, Dixon says to me, "In the broad sense of the word of what you're talking about, the answer is yes. It is possible for us to get people in large groups into space if we had the financial resources to do that." He says, "In fact, it would be easier for us to put people underneath the ocean because of the resource of the water in the ocean that we have. It would actually be easier for us to get them underwater more than to get them into space." And then he went on to many, many reasons, and it just rolled off of him, of the reasons of why, of what we have to do and how we get air and how we get water and what we do with the air and the water and how the propulsion systems work with hydrogen propulsion and what the byproducts are. And he just lost me in the dirt. Have you ever sat in front of somebody who just lost you in the dirt? Every hand should go up at that point in time. Yes, there should be hands. I know I lose y'all. Well, he just lost me, okay? He says, he said, in the narrow sense, though, that's the broad sense. But in the narrow sense, the answer is really no, because if we go and set a colony on the moon and something happens to all the people on the earth, the people on the moon cannot survive without the constant supplement of supplies going up to take care of them. To which, Fred over here got excited about that and started asking questions also. And he sent me a little note. It was very interesting in the note that he sent to me. He said, it cost the Russians charge us $70 million per man to put up in space. Is that correct? Okay. Now, the one I've forgotten, I want you to tell me. For us to get a gallon of water, do you remember what that was? $5,000 per pound to get up there. Put something up. Eight point something. So that would cost. That'd be expensive water. Yeah, you wouldn't want to send up a thing of Ozarka, would you? No, you wouldn't. All right. Well, the issue that's coming up is we've got this problem of getting large groups of people living among the stars or even on the moon. I mean, we could do it, but we've got to have resources to do it. Or putting them at the bottom of the ocean. Now, listen, we've got other people that are part of Sagemont Church. How many of y'all know Charles Shiver? Charles Shiver, okay. His son, Chris. Now, I've lived through this. Chris went to Dubai several years ago to work on a project as they were building this island out there where they're building all the everything. One of the things that they were going to build, one type of hotel they were going to build, was an underwater hotel. And so they worked on it and worked on it. And finally, that fell through for some reason, financial reasons, I think, and Chris came back home. Within 2 years, that project has moved from Dubai over to Indonesia, and Chris is now called over there to help with this, getting this underwater hotel where hundreds and hundreds of people can visit this underwater hotel. Now, I don't know why anybody would want to visit an underwater hotel more than 5 feet under, okay? Listen, if it's someplace I can't get to the top of very quickly with a breath of air, I'm not sure I want to go there. I'm not sure I'd ever go into space. I know some of y'all would sign up to go to space right now if they'd say the ticket's free, do you want to go? Some of y'all would go. I'm not going. I have fallen from 14 feet 5 inches before, and I am not going to fall any further than that. I don't even want to get very high in my Hummer. I want to make sure my feet are on the terra firma, firmly, as you might say. Okay. But anyway, and I don't like to go underwater very much. I love to swim, but as long as I've got to be able to get back up to the top with a breath of air. So that's as far as I want to be. But there are people who love to do this. Well, at the time of the tribulation, at the time of Armageddon, the day of the Lord, 7 years out from where we're talking about in this timeline, people have to have their homes or be making their homes where they can go and they can hide and be away from this earth in the heavens and also down under the water. You say, well, what about the submarines? Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is that's military. The Lord doesn't put stuff like this in for military. It's always, and when it happens, it's always magnificent and exact and large. It's talking about for the whole groups of people that are living. But what's interesting is the prophecy is there to Amos, to the people, and lo and behold, in the book of Obadiah, the prophecy is there again. Looky here. It says, though you build high like the eagle, that's on the mountaintops, though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. Talking about on the day of the Lord, it's happening. Well, placing colonies on the moon is one thing. Setting up colonies in space that are just floating around is really something else. It's another thing. In fact, in addition to that, this prophecy of Obadiah is to a group called the Edomites. Now, we know those Edomites today as the Palestinians who live in the Gaza Strip who are trying to control Israel. They have neither space technology nor underwater technology at all, so they are not going to be getting into space or underwater on their own. So they would have to pay for access to the heavens and to the colonies. And as of right now today, they are some of the poorest people in the world, and they are very limited in their financial resources. So even though they have to be in place, even though they're poor now, by the time that the church is snatched away and going through the time of the tribulation, they have to have resources to get them out of space, out in space, and also underwater, hiding there underwater. Well, with that in mind, the 7 years of tribulation will not provide enough time for these two tasks to be fulfilled. Therefore, both of them must be in place, ready to go, either before or just at the beginning of the tribulation, transition into the tribulation. So that's the reason why I put in the middle the inhabitation of space and the oceans by groups of folks, not just by one here and one there, by groups of folks. Well, with that, let's take one more look, because I want to add something to this. One more look at the overview of the tribulation period, and I want to add underneath it the book of Revelation scriptures that really act like layers that are going to take part in the events that are going to happen during the time of the tribulation. Most of the book of the Revelation is about the time of the tribulation of Israel. We think it's about the whole end times. It's really more about Israel, the tribulation. It says a whole lot less about what happens during the kingdom and during the deception and during the eternity future. We have to get that from other books. Well, here in this chart, so that you can see it, in that first book, in that first little block that's there, you see the timeline. We're talking about the tribulation time. The Lord has snatched his bride away. That's the church. And there they are. They've been snatched away from earth, and they have gone up to be in heaven. In heaven, they are with the Lord. And he is doing the marriage of the Lamb ceremony and also the judgment seat of Christ. And that takes 7 years for that to happen. At the end of the 7 years, The Lord is going to exit the bridal chamber with his bride, adorned with all their rewards and all their jobs and all the blessings that they have that are coming to them from the Lord. And he will return to the earth. And upon reaching earth, the battle of Armageddon will take place. But let's back up on that just a minute before we get there. Let's go back to the beginning of the timeline. The peace treaty is signed just as the church is being snatched away. That leads into the 7 years of tribulation here on earth for Israel. Now, it is for Israel, but everyone who is around Israel will also suffer also because of what is going on with Israel. The first half is called just the tribulation. The second half is called the Great Tribulation. Now, when the 7 years are over, the Lord is returned. You see the arrow pointing down, and it returns to the Battle of Armageddon. That occurs on one day. In fact, when we get there, I'll give you a preview of it. When it get there, the Lord leaves heaven at noon. And by 6 o'clock in the evening on the day of the Battle of Armageddon, the sun is setting and all is over. It is not a long battle at all. It is less than 6 hours in duration. And we'll see that when we get back. But what happens, what's interesting about that, it happens exactly 7 years after the snatching away of the church and the peace treaty occurs. And so that is all also called, as I've said to you already, it's called the Day of the Lord. The Battle of Armageddon happens on the Day of the Lord. Wherever you see it, it means that in the Old Testament and the New Testament, it's talking about that day.